Hi, I'm Nick Gregoriadis, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. The show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. This is episode 50. I'm really amazed and happy to hear or to see that it's episode 50. This podcast was started on a whim. It was a suggestion by my business partner, Mark. And, you know, I thought I'd give it a try. I've done a bunch of different podcasts before in the past. All of them were both successes and failures in their own way, but none of them got to episode 50. So it's very cool for me to see that we've hit that milestone with the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I've had what I feel are some great conversations with superb people, and I've learned a lot about myself in the process, and I've also picked up a lot of wisdom from these people in the process, and I hope it's going to continue to grow from strength to strength. You know, the show takes quite a lot of effort from and money as well from the editing process and the hosting of the files and creating the posts that eventually turn into the podcast that you listen to. It all takes time, and we pay out of pocket. So anything you guys can do to support the show is always appreciated. Now we have a facility that you could support us on Patreon. And as always, if you become a member of my online academy, the Jiu-Jitsu Master Academy, that helps us a lot. And you can also use the coupon code PODCAST to get 10% off. I'll leave the link to that in the show description. Also, our best-selling gis and belts and rash guards and jiu-jitsu gear is also 10% off for you, the listeners. So if you do any of those things, you're supporting the show and ensuring that it'll be here for another 50 episodes at least. Okay, guys, here's a buddy of mine from England, Paul Bridges, one of the first black belts in the UK. Let's dive right in. Hey, guys, so here is my friend Paul Bridges, one of the UK's original black belts. I'd say definitely in the first 30 or 40 black belts from the UK. One of the deep thinkers in jiu-jitsu, and also a very talented man who has many different skills and just a generally good persona. So I'm very happy to have you on the show, Paul. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Yeah, as we were saying, we were chatting before, it's just, you know, it's just great to kind of be able to, you know, be on kind of shows like this, especially like from someone myself who, you know, I've had my fair share of winning and losing in competitions and putting it out there the same as you have. But I'm, you know, by no shape means like 10 times Pan Am champion or multiple time world champion. And I think it's just amazing with shows like this and, you know, really cool guys like yourself that will give a moment to guys that have spent probably more time. I mean, I think like yourself, helping other people and teaching them the art and kind of trying to share it and, you know, like build the next generation and just kind of be, you know, recognized in, you know, any little shape or form for the work that, you know, all us guys push towards and the hard kind of studying and time that we kind of take with jiu-jitsu, and kind of it's a massive part of our life. And, you know, and when you spend so much time doing anything, any kind of little recognition is well received. So thanks for having me, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I mean, I as I've said many times, and in fact, just on episode 49, I mentioned it, the yardstick by which I measure all people, not just people in jiu-jitsu, is their character and their honesty and their willingness to grow and be open and give back to other people. And if I'm honest, how many medals someone has won doesn't even factor into my equation on whether or not I want to have them on the show. It actually usually counts against them, because I've very often found that the guys are exceptionally, exceptionally good. And this isn't always the case, but it's often the case. The guys are just those elite standouts are usually pretty boring because they've got nothing else in their lives. And so
yeah, it must be quite hard. I mean, I say to my guys, some of them want to be competitors. A lot of guys have no interest in it, and it's very, you know, in an academy, the guys that want to compete are the very small percentage of the academy. And I always say, you know, looking at some of the guys at the top competitors, and you look at them, usually they're quite young, they don't have, you know, serious relationships like maybe a fiance or like myself. I've got kids, two are in their 20s, one is 10, which is going to be 10 this weekend. And, you know, I'm a family man and stuff like that. And I've got a lot of other stuff going on. You know, I'm married, happily married man to my wife, Ali. And, you know, I've got a house. I've been all week outside, you know, between teaching, trying to build like this massive decking that I'm doing in the garden. There's a lot of things on. And I always say to the guys that want to do that, and I say, and they look at people like, you know, the Danaher Death Squad and people like that. And I say, man, you look at them guys. They wake up and they've got basically nothing else to do with nothing else that they're doing with their days. They wake up, they sleep on the mat in the afternoon. You know, they do one training session, sleep on the mat, wake up, have another training session, get back, go some to another gym, train there, and maybe 2-3 times a day. And they do that every day. And the thing is, it's kind of hard, you know, for people who want to have a balanced life. And I always say that with everyone, it's about having a balance. You know what I mean? I think, you know, and you learn that after a while with true martial arts, is everyone, you know, I think at some point, once you start getting good at jiu-jitsu, you want to, you know, everyone kind of wants to test themselves and compete. And then it's dependent on how, you know, how serious or how much you're willing to give, because the more that you want, the bigger the sacrifice, right? So it's all about, you know, how much are you willing to sacrifice of your time. And them guys are willing to say, right, for the next 5-10 years, this is all I'm going to do. And that's all they do. So they're able to reach great levels. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That it's hard for the general person to reach that level. And sometimes I think people look at them, and maybe some people understand, but talking to a lot of people, I don't think some people do understand how much you have to sacrifice and give to be at that level.
For sure. Know? And also, I think a lot of people don't understand that it's not only do you have to sacrifice and give and train like a demon, you have to have a very specific set of genetic gifts and abilities, and bone structure and physiology. And also there's other recipes for that success, including you have to have the right coach and the right team and the right environment, and you have to be eating the right foods usually. And again, unless you're a total genetic freak, I think people think that it's just the recipe for success in anything is just hard work, and it's not. Hard work is just the main ingredient. It's not the only ingredient. There's timing and luck and community and planning and a whole bunch of other things that count. So,
It's like the perfect, they call it the perfect storm, when everything comes together at the same time. And if you're lucky enough to start training at the right time, in the right environment, with the right coaches, you know, you're naturally gifted and stuff like that. You know, you could rise to the top. It's really funny you say that, because earlier I made a post with a quote on it. It's like a meme with like a photo of me competing on it and stuff, which says, "I've never been physically gifted. I'm just good at never giving up." Because I mean, that's my thing, to get as far as I've got in jiu-jitsu and what I do. Because I'm seriously, I always say to everyone, man, I'm not the kind of person that you would say, you know, he's, you know, he's really strong, he's fast, he's this. I mean, you've met me. I'm not, you would never look at me and go, my God, I don't want to roll with that dude, because he's going to kind of like twist me up. Because, you know, physically I'm not that type of guy. But on the other hand, it's been a blessing in the other way, because it's made me have to kind of use technique since day one. So I've had to understand exactly what I'm doing, how to do it, where, you know, like we say, where the leverage is. just because I've had to, and that's not taken away from other people, because I know some big guys, they're just as good, you know what I mean? But I think when you haven't got them attributes that can kind of bridge the gap and not make you aware of they're giving you that extra advantage, you know, it's kind of, I suppose, like youth. When you're young, you don't appreciate it until it starts going away, and then you go, oh my god, I didn't realize that I was doing so well because of my age, and now I'm this older and I've not got that anymore. But for me, it's been like that since I've been young. I've never been like some beast or you know, strong or a natural. I've never been a natural athlete. I mean, my body is not kind of designed that way. I've got too many quirks with my body to kind of make it work that way. You know, and it's kind of, and that's give, I think, kept me in good stead from day one, to have to learn it the long way round, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
I've had no fast track.
Totally. It's strange that you're talking about this now, because I've just had something in my mind. I cannot remember if I've discussed this before on the show. I think I might have, but I'm always reminded, you know, when you speak about some of those competitors who, don't get me wrong, I really respect the hell out of them, because being a professional jiu-jitsu athlete is generally not a very rewarding life in many senses. It is in a few, but generally you finish without having much financial stability and with a pretty beat up body. You know, I think I was in fourth grade or fifth grade or something, and my teacher was like trying to give this life lesson to the classroom, and he was telling us about a woman he knew that she was a young woman. She was like 19 or 20, and she had just, there's this particular swim in Cape Town where I'm from. It's between the mainland and Robben Island, where Nelson Mandela was imprisoned. It's a few kilometers, and she broke this record for the swim, and you know, she became the toast of the town, and everyone was taking her out for dinner, and you know, she was in the newspaper. And then, you know, a few months later, someone else broke her record, and all of a sudden, you know, everything kind of just stopped. You know, people kind of started to forget about her. And he said, if you base your self-worth on external things like that, then when those things go away, then you're in trouble. And I think that's a big problem. I'll never forget it. I was in UK of all places. I think you might have even been at this competition as well. I cannot remember which one it was. It was maybe 5 years ago. And it was one of the UK's top competitors, a young guy at the time. I remember I found him sitting under the bleachers crying, just weeping. And I said to him, dude, what the hell's wrong with you? What's going on? And he was like, well, I lost and I shouldn't have lost, and my coach is expecting me to win. And I was just thinking to myself, I just said to him, why are you doing this to yourself, bro? Like, I mean, what, how is this helping you? It's, you don't need to put this much pressure on yourself. It's just jiu-jitsu, dude.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he got it, but I like to think that he did. It's just, it doesn't really help anything, right?
Yeah, it's like I was saying earlier, it's kind of, you know, it's like martial arts, it's all about finding the balance. And I think sometimes that's forgotten, you know, the balance, not just in the martial arts, but it's there. I mean, as you know, learning martial arts, whether it be jiu-jitsu, karate, kung fu, whatever expression we want to kind of use to find it, it's all about finding the balance in life. And that's what the martial arts and the Japanese, you know, I love all the Japanese ways of doing things. I think they're such a beautiful nation, and you know, just a beautiful kind of culture. And you know, if you look back to any point of time, I mean, them guys, you know, lived it and they worked it out very soon, and that knowledge is passed down all the time. That, you know, it is about finding balance in, and that's part, you know, one of the main gifts that jiu-jitsu will give you if you're open-minded enough and realize that it's not all about winning the medals, is finding balance. And you know, like you said earlier about like the competitors, and to take a quote from Carlson great Carlos Gracie Jr. And he turned around and said, I remember seeing an interview of him, and he turned around and said, you know, the life expectancy of most competitors is 3 to 5 years, you know, at the top level, and to keep on winning. And he said, you know, medals are great, but medals rust. And I thought that's so true. You know what I mean? And they do. You know, you win medals, they're great, like you're saying, they're great for the moment, and, you know, and they're great to put on the wall, but they're not the be all and end all. And with things like that, it was really, really surprising that one of my top coaches, he's only young, Kyle his name is, and he's 18, and he's been doing like jiu-jitsu for quite a few years. And when you know the fight in the UFC with Bisping and GSP, and GSP is without a doubt probably the greatest champion in the UFC, probably, you know, give or take enough
That
cut and
argument
enough.
can be made, definitely.
Yeah, and you know, and he did everything. He held the title like for God knows how long, and because Kyle has only been doing it for about 4 or 5 years, something like that. When he had the match with Bisping, Kyle didn't even know who he was, and he's been like in martial arts, and he knows, you know, MMA and everything else. And he said to be honest, I was chatting to him about it, and he said, oh, to be honest, I didn't even, you know, he knows who McGregor is, and he knows all the other guys. I said, oh, I didn't really even know GSP was until I watched a few things, and they you know, and they were kind of promoting it. I didn't really know who the guy was. And I was like, that just shows you know, you can win, be one of the greatest champions ever, and then within a year, 2 years, 3 years, everyone's forgot about you, because like you're saying with that woman, they just replace you with the next best thing, you
And
know.
you're only
And
as good
it,
as your last fight as well. And if you keep going, everyone eventually loses, except, I don't know, I was going to say except for Roger, but I reckon even if he carried on, eventually someone would beat the dude. And then everyone would suddenly say, oh, he's crap. Or he's not as good as we
exactly.
thought he was, because that's just the way people are, right? Like it's just the nature of the game. And I really hope GSP doesn't, I really do hope he doesn't try to come back again, because I mean, I don't know if you could, or you get what I'm saying, right? I want to keep that the public having that good image of him.
Exactly. That dude's amazing. And it's kind of like myself. I was doing re I mean, I'm you know, even in my 40s, I was doing submission only, and I was doing like a lot of the Tafts. I won the British Pro ADCC and stuff
Nice.
like that. And this is like in my 40s, and I've kind of, and that was at the normal division as well. And then I got asked with, you know, last minute to be on Polaris, for instance, and it was like 10 days towards it. And I've been doing like no gi against Jeff Lawson. He's a great competitor. Obviously, he's been in like the tough house. He's been an MMA champion, great jiu-jitsu guy. He's been like a black belt for a long while, black belt in judo, everything like that. And yeah, and I went there and, you know, obviously tried to like foolishly train for it within the 10 days that I had. Come in kind of a little bit underprepared, and not taking anything away from Jeff, but you know, of everything I've done, I mean, that was my last match, because I haven't competed at this point since. And yeah, within a minute or so into the fight, you might have seen it's been, you know, it's the biggest kind of match exposure wise I've probably ever had as myself, and it's the one that went viral. And you know, everyone's probably seen it, where he throws me with a ippon, and bang to the mat, spins around, grabs my arm, gets me in an armbar.
I've actually seen that, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful technique. And I said to him afterwards, man, that was just like flawless. And it was kind of what, you know, when you get beat so well, you're kind of in shock, but amazed at the same time. And you kind of, I applauded him about how well, because I'd never been beaten ever in that flawless fashion, you know, where it just kind of takes your breath away. Like, did that actually just really happen? But that's the thing. Up to then, I was doing really well. Like I was, my matches were you know, against good guys as well, really high level guys. I was doing really well, really well, really well. And then I got asked to be on that. And you know what it's like if you get asked to a big show like that. Sometimes you don't want to turn it down. So I kind of went to it. And the funny thing is, if that's the only match you've seen of me, you'd think, oh my God, does this guy know what he's doing? But then again, I kind of I take some kind of viewpoint of when Hodja beat Buchecha, and I had my judo coach come training the week afterwards, and he said, "Oh, I watched the fight with Hodja," and he went, "Yeah, I see him beat that guy because he's like got a strong judo background. He doesn't obviously know that all the players are in jiu-jitsu," and he said, "That Buchecha guy went, is he any good like that?" And I was like, oh, really? But if that, but then I thought about that and then thought about my match, and I thought, well, if that's your only, if that was your only reference, if you'd never seen Buchecha before, you'd go, actually, yeah. And I know Hodges, like, you know, on a different world in jiu-jitsu terms compared to us, you know, normal human beings. But you know, even still, it's kind of like Buchecha is an absolute beast and, you know, an absolute legend in the game, is, you know, up there alongside Hodja. And for him to do that, but I thought, well, you know, if that was your only reference to come in and watch that, then you would probably think that you'd go, my God, he just took him apart. Like he didn't really know what he, you know, maybe was doing. But it's at that level, it's you make a mistake at one point and you pay for it like straight away, you know.
But I think
And
what's interesting as well is if you then met, let's say your judo coach, he hadn't yet spoken to you and he had just watched that match, and then he attends a social event and sees those two men on either side of the room and decides to speak to only the one who won because he equates victory with character without knowing them, then he's made a mistake. The same way, if you equate your self-worth based on anything that external, you're making a mistake. You know, like, does that make sense?
And the thing is, you can't do that because, I mean, with all of us, because I mean, to do jiu-jitsu, you've got to have a competitive streak in you at some point, as we all have. And the thing is like after, you know, after a big match and that you don't do as well as you do, you can kind of like feel down about yourself. Like for, because I did after that, I felt down for about a week or whatever, and I knew exactly why it was. But the thing is, it is that thing of, you know, making a lesson from it. And that's why I said, I mean, that guy, he's my judo coach. And since that match, I've been learning judo because I realized what I lacked of, you know, and it was my understanding, not that I'm going to be like an Olympian in any sense or form at throwing people in a judo term, but I lacked a little bit of understanding of the grip game and what was, you know, the setup and what was going on. And now I understand exactly what he did. So for me, for my journey, that was a priceless lesson. From the outside, you know, maybe you know, it looks different, but for me, that's a priceless lesson that I will take with me and has bettered my game because I got thrown with such a great judo technique, and obviously realized afterwards when I kind of thought about everything that went on and kind of broke it down of why that happened, and then taking steps to improve my own martial arts understanding. And just today, when I was teaching in the morning, we was doing a drill, and it comes, and the reference I used was that match. I said, I know where I went wrong in that match, and you know, and take the throw out of it, you know, because the throw, I didn't get beat on the throw. I got thrown, but we can get taken down and thrown, and the match is not over. I said, what it was when I hit the ground, it was I extended my arm to try to make space, and I extended it the other way, and you know, now we do a drill of where once a guy takes you down, to keep your limbs close to, in a scramble, to try to keep limbs close to your body. So you go kind of feet or into a turtle and roll up and then try and get under them, rather than, when you get prone to start extending outwards, because that's when you start to extend limbs away from your body, you're never as strong. And that's usually what a person needs within a scramble to latch onto an arm, foot control, an underhook, or in that case, an armbar. And it was more, that was the, when I rewatched it, I figured out very quickly that was the mistake, as in the sense of I was stretching with my arms to try to shrimp, to try to get my legs over to pull some type of guard back, which is not wrong, but that's, but on the same hand, that was what failed me in that moment, because it made it very possible and kind of easy in him in a way to kind of latch onto the arm and take it home. So for me, with things like that, as long as I learn from them, it's all part of the journey, it's all part of the experience, because then I can share that with my students, and then they won't make the same errors in their technique or their understanding when they kind of have a match in the future or
That sounds
roll
like a
on.
healthy mindset for sure. And yeah, I mean, I would encourage anyone to take that mindset. It's most people understand that it's a bit of a cliche nowadays, whereby you see all these memes. Like one of them is you either win or you learn. And I think people are starting to understand that they're just both sides of the same coin, and that. You have to be able to accept and grow through both of them. Well, I wanted to change the course of the conversation a little, and I mean I should have introduced or should have mentioned this in your introduction, and that is that you're also not only are you a great jiu-jitsu teacher, you're also a comic book illustrator of pretty high regard. In fact, not only have you done some work for Marvel, even more importantly, you once designed a Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood t-shirt. Which was one of my favorites, and I know you mentioned that there's a connection between comic art and being an artist and jiu-jitsu, and I'm wondering if you could just expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, God, that's pretty deep because that's pretty hard. I mean, oh God, just explaining this, I've done explained it really well, and you've caught me off guard a little bit. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's kind of like the thing is, the system itself of like martial arts or whichever, the way I was trying to explain this the other day in the lesson, and the system itself is it's almost like a science experiment, and it's more of a science than it is an art. Like the system itself, if you look at it, it's based upon leverage, body mechanics, levers and fulcrums and wedges and all these things to kind of be able to capitalize and break joints and to sweep people and it's basically a science in that sense more than an art. I mean, jiu-jitsu itself is not an art form. It's not an art in my head. It's not an art. It's a science. We make it the art. The art comes through us. It can't be an art because it is a set of moves. So what makes it work is the scientifical approach of physics and everything else. We make it an art form. So the art form comes from us,
I love
not from.
that. I love that. That way of looking, it's almost like art, I guess, or drawing itself. You could, some
It
people
comes
would,
from you, right? You've
well,
got
it
tools,
does,
that's
but
what you do.
where I was going with that is you could say that, okay, drawing, you could break it down into its components, as in light and shadow and texturing and shading and form and proportion. So they are these almost scientific kind of step-by-step processes, but the artist creates. It comes from beyond that. He uses all those to create something more. Is that kind of the.
But the art itself comes from you, right? So because if you've got, if you're doing a piece of art, then you need apparatus, you need tools to work with, right? Then you need the paper. Then it's made up of geometric shapes. So there's a science to it within, like the golden ratio, as they call, with the human face. Like everything comes from, why something they believe looks aesthetically pleasing, like in the human face and body, is linked
Proportion.
very, mean, proportion links very closely to the golden ratio. So that's a science in itself. But the art comes, you've got to put it down. So I believe the art, the artistic side is you. It's not, you know, it's not the pencil, it's not the paper, it's not the computer. It, because it's your expression that either makes it look good or, you know, makes it look, you know, not so pleasing. You know what I mean? So in that sense, I believe that, you know, within jiu-jitsu, it's the same. You can break it down as people try to do, even myself, and I know you do a great job of breaking down, you know, can, you know, a lot of different ways of teaching and learning and trying to kind of absorb the knowledge and the information and the best way that someone can learn it, retain it, and then regurgitate it, because that's all we're trying to do at the end of the day. But the artistic side, the way someone moves, their understanding comes from their self, not from the art, if you know what I mean, because yeah. it's more you absorb what you can, and then it's the expression of yourself, right? Uh-huh. Like when you roll with someone, we always say in jiu-jitsu, and you know as well, when you roll with someone, you kind of know whether this guy is a nice guy or whether he's just there for, you know, to kind of rub his ego up, you know what I mean? He's just trying to maybe hurt people or neck crank just to feel good about himself for whatever reason. And that's an expression of that person and their self. And you can feel that when you roll, for sure. So, I mean, that's what I think the connection is. You know what I mean? It's like everything you can, everyone's, you know, within reason, given different tools, but it's not the tools that you're given. As I say, it's what you actually do with them.
For sure. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. They're just the vehicle through which you create your expression.
Mm-hmm.
100%. No, I totally agree. It's something I've always been fascinated in is drawing, and it's something I would say I am white belt 1.5 stripes at. And I'd love to, in fact, I'm going to, I've bought a few books and a bunch of material. I'd love to improve my drawing ability, partly because I've always just wanted to be able to draw jiu-jitsu. I think it would make me not only a better... not only would that be fun, it would make me a better teacher, the ability to just to draw and then annotate jiu-jitsu positions. I think that would just be so much fun, like to create these almost like blueprint drawings. So for a guy like you, you have two skill sets. It's the crossover or the Venn diagram of two skill sets that I think go very well together. And I wanted to know, do you have fun drawing jiu-jitsu and do you ever do that?
No, I mean, I kind of, that when for me, I've always naturally, I'm one of them people that kind of annoyingly with art and drawing, I've always kind of had a knack for it. I don't really think about it too much. It's one of them states where I can just completely immerse myself and get into it, like you would in jiu-jitsu. It's almost get into a flow with it. Like I can be drawing and my wife can be like talking to me, and I'm not trying to ignore her. I won't actually even hear her.
That sounds like a very valuable skill.
No, not when they're annoyed that they said the same thing three times and you're still sitting there drawing. No, but I can just start drawing. I kind of go into my own space and my own head, and I just get completely taken away from it. And it's like everything. Obviously, I'm still conscious of what's happening and stuff like that. But I've always, for me, you know, luckily enough for me that I'm one of them people that I've just naturally always found it quite easy to draw. Obviously I've practiced and I've got better the more I practice. It's not like I arrived like at a black belt level, but I've always had like what you would call maybe a knack for it, you know, like it's the same thing, which is the opposite I think in the jiu-jitsu, where the jiu-jitsu I've really I come from like a karate and a stand-up background anyway, so I had a good reference for what the martial arts were and training and everything else. But with the jiu-jitsu, I've really worked and worked and worked and worked and worked to kind of have a good understanding of it. And
would you say correct if I said that you value your jiu-jitsu ability more than you value your drawing ability precisely because of that, because you worked so much harder for the one than the other?
Yeah, and I really, but I mean, with I get so much more. It's really weird. I do get with the art, with the drawing. It's like I love doing it. It's like serenity to me. I really like just being there and doing it. It's, for me, it's like with what I do with the jiu-jitsu is great. And then if I draw, it's like relaxation for me, really, more than anything else. But with the jiu-jitsu, I just love everything about it. Like, the teaching, which I love the most, is helping other people. That's my main thing is go, because I think Dan Strauss asked me before when he was interviewing me on his podcast, and he said, "Well, what would you consider yourself, a competitor or an instructor?" I said, "Well, instructor first, 100%. I'm one of them guys that I like to compete, but I'm the same as you, with the understanding. I understand how fickle the game of competing is, that you can win, 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 win. I could win for 5 years straight, lose one, two, three matches on the trot, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's done. He's never that good anyway." And yeah, but so I understand how fickle that kind of game is. And so, but that comes through experience of putting yourself out there and winning and losing, of when you start realizing that, and realizing, like we were saying before, the sacrifices you have to make to do anything, And for me, the only reason that I kind of stepped away from trying to make like comic book art, or whichever you want to call it, sequential art, a career, was it was just mathematical, really, in the sense of I worked out how much time that it would take me to draw like a good comic page, which would be anywhere between 12 to 14 hours. And unless you're really high level, same as anything, like a pro athlete, right? Unless you're really high level in the top two or three, then you're not getting paid a huge amount of money. So I realized that the amount of hours that I would have to put in to put in good work, so you would get like what I was saying before with Daniel Strauss, with the same thing. He asked me a similar thing, and I said to him that the thing is, it's kind of like being any kind of artist, an actor or whichever, that you've got to keep on getting more work all the time. You do one work, once that comic or that graphic novel is finished, then you're hoping the phone's going to ring, or you've got to be on the phone trying to get, another gig. And if your work's not great work, then you might not get another gig, kind of thing. So you're right. It's very much hand to mouth, kind of scenario. So where with me, jiu-jitsu was like building up my academy at the same time doing that. I realized that that was much more steady to kind of grow that. It's much more reliable. The hours, they weren't as crazy that I'd be sitting at a desk for 12, 14 hours a day straight drawing, which sounds nice, but that's hard. It's really,
Yeah, it's hard work.
yeah, it's not easy. It's really difficult to kind of just keep on doing that. And the thing is, you've got to give it so much concentration. Is like when I was doing it and like putting work in and trying to get work and stuff like that, it was really hard, because I wasn't spending much time with my family or my wife and stuff like that, because I'm so busy trying to get pages finished to put in to see if they're gonna, be passed, to be printed and stuff like that. So the thing is, putting one against the other, the jiu-jitsu was a no-brainer for me in that sense. And the plus that I love everything about jiu-jitsu. I love the lifestyle. I love how, it keeps you fit, how it keeps you mentally strong. Kind of the way that you can help people with it. And that's my biggest gain is teaching people and helping them and see them improve, and giving that, especially like with kids, because we teach a lot of kids classes, and our kids program is like packed at the moment with kids. And that's my biggest return on anything putting out, is the confidence that it gives them. I mean, we've got one girl Jovi her name is, and she's the most timid girl. She barely speaks, and her mum's brought her down, and she said her confidence has come on so much, and she's, you know, she's really tiny, tiny little girl. And her mum said, and she come in and she told us about her when she was at school, and this is a girl that wouldn't say boo to a ghost. And she said she was in a play the other week, and she see a boy go up to another boy and start bullying and picking on him. And she went over and she told the boy to leave him alone and stop doing that, for what she's learned in the lessons. And the boy turned around and tried to hit her, and she went to defend herself. And then obviously she went and told the teacher, and she'd done all the right things. She, you know, she intervened. She felt safe to do so. She talked to him and told him that, you know, it wasn't the right thing to do. And then she went and told the teacher about it. And I said, that's, you know, from a girl that wouldn't really speak to anyone when she first come to the academy, to be able to do that, you know, even as adults, you know, we know that even if you're sitting on a train, like in the underground, and you see someone that's shouting or someone that's pushing someone else, how many people would actually even go up, have the confidence to go up and say, hey, you know, leave the guy alone? Some people would, but generally we know you'll sit there and no one would do anything.
Yeah,
everyone would look away.
And it's
fear of, obviously, man, if I'm the one that steps up and says something, he could turn on me. Then I'm going to be the one that is, you know, the person that he's going to be attacking and be aggressive towards.
For sure.
So for me, when I heard that, that was like one of my proudest moments ever, to know that we've given that girl confidence in not only speaking up for herself, but other people as well. And that, for me, is beautiful, because that will, you know, guide her for the rest of her life, that confidence.
Well, and also you could sum it up even maybe a little bit more simply in saying that you've made the world a better place, because she is a stronger person with stronger boundaries, and she's going to not only be able to protect herself, but also protect and help others. And that just, you've just made a better human being in some way, which is going to ripple out into the world, into her community, and to her relationships and things like that. And so, yeah, the world is going to be a better place because of that. And I mean, at the end of it all, to me at least, that's what we're all doing here. That should be your guiding principle, is how can I leave this world better than when I found it?
Yeah, and that's exactly, took the words straight out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was saying, chatting to my wife the other week, and I was saying that, I mean, for me, my thing is exactly that. I said, you know, to know that, you know, me being here on this earth from being born to when I die, that I've contributed something and made the world a better place rather than a worse place. And for me, if I've done that, I've succeeded in life, and that's
sure.
It. And, you know, and it can be a big thing or a small thing, and, you know, and you're the same as me, is always trying to be, you know, looking for the positive and trying to build people rather than break people down. You know what I mean? And that's my thing. I get so much more enjoyment out of helping people and building people up, because you see enough of it, you know, where people are, you know, you'll see it online, you can do something really positive, and then, you know, someone will make some snide remark or say something about you, and they've never even met you, you know what
yeah.
I mean? They don't know what you've done, they don't know, maybe you're going through issues yourself, but you know what I mean? And I think there's just far too much of that out in the public nowadays, of where too many people are easy to kind of point a finger or kind of make a negative remark, when really, you know, just be nice. It's like I said it when I was teaching the kids class the other day, and we was talking about respect and stuff like that, and Neo, my son who takes the kids class,
it's still the best kids name I've heard. Awesome, by the way.
But Neo,
yeah, I love that name.
Yeah. And I said to him, I said, you know, we were talking about, and all the kids were saying their piece and explaining different bits and bobs. We were asking them questions and stuff to make them think. And I said to Neil, I said, well, what do I always tell you? And he said, just be kind. You just got to be a good person. I said, that's it. That's all you got to do. Is that's it. You just got to be a nice, kind person. And, you know, and and that's who you got to be. You haven't got to be anything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
that's great.
You know, I've tried to teach that, you know, from to the kids at the gym and obviously my own son, from an early age, is just be a nice person. You know what I mean? Just be nice to people. Why be? I don't get why, you know, some people are kind of just negative towards, or they want to hate on, like,
well, it's, everyone. It's because they're just reflecting what they feel inside. I really believe that. That the world is your mirror. It's the more I study, the older I get, the more I learn about life, the more I see that the world really is your mirror. And when someone, a very wise woman once said to me, sometimes when people are at their least lovable is when they need the most love. And it's the same when you, what kind of person must they be inside to be facing the world like that and treating the world like that. I totally get you.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And if you could, if them people had more people like maybe you and me, or took a jiu-jitsu class, then they might start loving the world, right?
For sure.
Hopefully.
For sure. My brother, thank you so much for your time. I really did enjoy doing episode 50 with you. And if people want to find out more about your academy or maybe your artwork or anything that you're involved in, where should we direct them to?
If you go to GracieBahaHastings.com, that's our website, or Gracie Baha Hastings, or on Instagram, Facebook, my own Facebook, which is just Paul Bridges. People can tap me up on that. And I'm always, you know, same as yourself, I'm always around. I'm always up for kind of helping people, you know, coming to do seminars, stuff like that. If anyone is interested in doing anything, it's like you were saying earlier about, you know, your move to America. We've, you know, me and my wife Ali before have had, you know, had discussions about, you know, kind of expanding ourselves and, you know, looking at different places like America and stuff like that. So you never know, if you put it out there, someone might go, he's an interesting guy. You know what I mean? let's bring him over for a seminar or to do something or whichever. And for sure. I'm always up for, you know, doing positive things, basically.
That's good to hear, my brother. I'm sure this will lead to some good connections for you. Paul, my brother, thanks again for your time and peace out. Yeah.
Thank you very much and take care.
So Paul reminds me of something that I think there's a lot of people in jiu-jitsu who, I don't know why, but they can't see this. You know, in jiu-jitsu, the measurement of someone's ability is all down to how well they can grapple or how many other people they can beat. Someone once said it to me, and he said the only thing people care about in jiu-jitsu is belts and who can beat who. And I see a lot of that. I definitely see that in myself, especially when I was a younger man and like a purple belt, brown belt. That's what I used to think about, is if someone was great at jiu-jitsu and could smash someone else, that was meant they were, in my mind at least, they were a better person, which looking back, I realize is so naive and ridiculous. And I really hope listening to people like Paul can get us past something or past erroneous thinking like that, because even though Paul isn't a world champion, I mean, you can hear he's got a lot to offer, he's got a lot to teach, and he's a good human being. And that's the most important thing, and it doesn't always go hand in hand with competition victories. I've met a couple of competitors who were just straight up douchebags, and not very good people at all. To be fair, I've also met some that were fantastic people. And either way, it's important to realize that being a martial artist is so much more about how tough you are, or how many medals you've won. And again, it's people like Paul that help us remember that. Hey guys, keep in mind, I'm always open to suggestions for the show. If you have someone you think would be a cool guest, just email me, nick@jiu-jitsubrother.com. And if they're cool, I'm sure we can make it happen. Okay, guys, thanks for listening this far to episode 50, and here's to another 50 episodes. Peace out. Thank you.